The following is a broadcast of an interview conducted on December 27th during the morning show with the Citizen Lobbyist. Enjoy. This week, the last week of the year, looking back, this long, long time ago, it seems 12 months. How could it have been? All the stuff that's happened. Yeah. Where do you want to start?
Well, again, as we did the review on the assembly last week that I listened to again yesterday just to kind of get a grasp of everything that happened on the assembly before I tackled the school board, and it does go really, really fast. The school board is, you know, a little bit of a different beast than the assembly. It's a little more, you know, kind of housekeeping things. There's not a lot of big-spirited topics that came through, but they certainly tackled an array of things. They started the year with actually now a past president, Mr. Dunleavy, who was the school board president. He, again, as everybody knows, ran for office later in the year and vacated his presidency seat there, but he started out the year at the helm. They school board moved into their new digs. They had rehabbed the administration gym, basically. They're in an old school, retired elementary school as it was, and they used students did it all in-house and redid this gym that really turned out to be a nice school board room. It was kind of a just-in-time project because the assembly ended up having to need it badly while they're rehabbing their own offices. The school board had been using a facility at the Palmer High School that they needed for cyber learning, so it was time, and they've ended up really using that room well. They use it for teacher training, and they've cut down some of their expenses on having to go out of house to rent places to do some training because they have their own room there. So
and just a moment, because I've been thinking about that. We've become accustomed to the room, but I remember I do have when I close my eyes, mm-hmm. I remember the feeling when I first walked in there. This was an amazing transformation,
right.
Into a very useful and very pleasant room.
Right, and just the audio, as you know, probably very sensitive to the audio visual of having the screens up there and being able to watch people testify and the school board members on a straight shot across. And I'm told that the assembly has, it's been good for them to be there because it's given them some thought process on how they want to do their own room. The capacity on this room is about 300. Capacity in the new space for the borough assembly will be about the same. But I think you'll see a completely different configuration. And they use it for different reasons, too. Again, training, so they have to have chairs that move around.
Right.
And that sort of thing. But I think it's been a very welcomed. I've heard nothing but positive about it. It was great to watch the kids that were involved in doing it. It was really kind of a on-the-job training for all of them, kind of equal amount of girls and boys, which was good to see. And I think they got some really good foundation skills out of it. So it was a win-win for the community, I think.
Right, right. Started off
good
way. Yes.
And they had, of course, their required audit review. They have to have an audit. Outside audit to make sure they're, you know, they have a large amount of money going through the school district, and they have an outside audit that comes in, and they were found in compliance for both the state and federal requirements and using that money. So that's always a good way to start. They approved many new courses last year, and this is a lot of response from community. They have a curriculum committee that goes through this, and a lot of, you know, teachers, community coming together saying, hey, we need some new courses. Kids need different things. I didn't go through all of them, but there was poetry. There was principles on new science. There's all kinds of new, really fun courses for kids and so they can get their requirements. They also did opened and did a name approval for an early college, Alaska School that they started. So a brand new school to the curriculum. This is something that's housed actually in Eagle River on the campus of UAA. They couldn't quite work out the details for that here at Matsu yet, so they had some space there. So they've come up with an arrangement. They started out with about 46 kids this year, teaching, getting, you know, credits for early requirements for college. So this is a real win-win for them. It should save them a lot of money. They have to apply to get in it. There's quite a rigorous selection, and they hope to grow that. They got substantial money from the legislature to do that. This actually wasn't taxpayer money. It was a grant from the legislature that got it going. They're asking for more this year. It was kind of a three-year pilot program, and they're pretty happy with the results. They passed a lot of resolutions, just like the assembly does. One was regarding the charter school fund balance. They wanted to, you know, they think that fund balance should stay there for charter schools. They also passed a resolution for the charter school tax reform or refund, and that was there was a lot of angst. Most all the charter schools are housed in private buildings, and they have pretty high rents with to go along with those charter schools. They thought it only fair, since that money came to the borough, that be refunded back so that could go back into the budgets for the curriculum for the schools. And that took kind of a windy path through the school board. It was passed by the school board. It went on to be passed with the assembly, but there was a little bit of a snafu, I would say, at the end of budget time. It was the understanding of the administration at the school board that this would be additional monies. It would be a rebate that would come back that could go to charter schools. But at the end of the day, when the borough funded at their 3%, which was really 1.5% for the year before that they gave no increase in funding, and then last year 1.5%, they kind of included it in that 1.5%. So we'll see how that shakes out this year. There was some probably attempts a little bit at the end of the year to get that shook out. It was about $140,000 that would have been an additional funding from the borough that the school board would have liked to have had, but it sounded that kind of got pushed along, and we'll see how that comes out of the budget this year if they show it as a rebate after you know, their initial funding. They took their budget show on the road. They had several presentations. I went to a couple of them. They had one here at Swanson. They took it up to Willow. It was good for both parents. They had one at Birch Tree Charter School, which was good to have the charter people see how it is, the nuts and bolts. Funding, of course, for schools is very, very complex, and I'd say probably 90% or better of citizens just don't understand how it all comes. It's actually three pools of money or more, federal, state, and local contribution. And it's just very complex in the way that the Department of Education requires that it all be divided out. And they really are, and I've said this many times, are at the bottom of the food chain when it comes to money, because they have to kind of wait for not only the state, but the borough to decide what their contribution is going to be. So a lot of their budget starts very early. It seems to me to be a shame that they have to put all this exercise money into sort of the would have, you know, what we will do if we can, and not with a lot of unknowns. And I think I'm hopeful, and I think there will be a lot of stress on this year for some forward funding of education, so they can have a better mechanism to decide, you know, what their budget's going to be. I hope their employees and students alike.
You know, one of the interesting things about what we're doing here, I believe, is we're talking about what happened this past January and on through the year, and it might just give us some sense as we look, especially after New Year's, and we start down this next January, of what pattern emerges is typically the kind of thing that happens every year, and then especially the differences.
Right.
And what I like what you're saying is that basically there were some steps taken and they moved in a certain direction, particularly with funding. And it's good to remember that so that we're not starting from nowhere.
Right.
There was momentum. There was a decision. It isn't a thing that you have to recreate every year. And I think sometimes when, especially if you get new members on various bodies, without history, unless you have that, then it begins to feel as if it's a new discovery and we're going to do this new thing, when in reality these topics have been raked over in the past and there's been progress made. And I think that's been from time to time, particularly over at the borough assembly level, has been a criticism that people have forgotten that there is history in the attempt to be fresh and do a new thing.
Right, and yeah, very good point. There is just this big void in understanding of the budget mechanism. I think that Mr. Ken Forrest, who came on as the chief financial business officer at the borough, has done an amazing job of really putting it so that people can understand it, because that's always been just very evident that even members of the assembly, a great majority of them, didn't understand the nuts and bolts of funding education and how the process really worked. And I think he's done a really good job, not only appealing to them, showing them how it is, starting early in the year so that they, you know, this is where we're at as you're making your decisions, this is what you should know, but he's been letting parents in on it and community members in it and their own board. And I think you make a good point, Mike, that having that historical presence of having people that have been through the process several times on the boards, and then having some fresh eyes for looking, you know, at some other ways of looking at things maybe that weren't looked at before, are really, really helpful. But the bottom line is they have to understand how the math works.
Sure.
And the math is not simple. It's just not simple the way that the depends on. For instance, this year, you know, they've met their goal of 17,500 kids, but they're not all in the right schools, so to speak. So they took a little hit financially because some of the smaller schools lost some kids. Most kids moved into the core, and people just don't, you know, understand that. But it's good that they're on the same page for awareness, so that's good.
And there's as you were speaking, I realized that that's another one of the major differences between the two bodies, the school board and district and the borough assembly and the borough, that on the borough side, there really is no equivalent to Mr. Forrest. And I talk about that in terms of the role that position plays. And as a result, there seems to be a more diffused sense of what's happening, if I can put it that way, to the budget over at the assembly. And the assembly seems to be taking a much stronger hand in making it happen, but the information flow to the public and the display of that in an understandable way, it doesn't, at this point, seem to be as clear as what's happening over in the school district.
Right. And, well, one of the first things that Mr. Forrest did, and this wasn't last year, but the year before when he came aboard with Dr. Burnley, was they spent $1 million on an accounting system. He recognized right away, you know, they have 2,500 employees. They have very complex, they have grants, they have all kinds of fiduciary responsibilities that he knew was not covered by the accounting system they were using. And it was, you know, changing our accounting system, which was complete last spring too, is not an easy thing. They had to run both of them simultaneously for a while to just make sure that it was working. It was a big deal, but it has just completely changed the pattern of the way that they're able to present financial information. And I'm disappointed that the borough has not taken on that same direction. I maybe this year they will, because to me that's really the answer to a lot of angst around is to know where the numbers are and how it's all being spent. And Mr. Forrest does a really good job of keeping the board updated as to here we are. This is what we have to change. We have to tweak this. We have to do this. They, for instance, had to have a hiring freeze in their operations portion last year because of not quite the expected funding they thought they might get from the state. They gave some one-time energy money, but they didn't increase the base student allocation. So he's reactionary, but he's pro-actionary. And, of course, having said that, Mr. Forrest is retiring. He has handed off a very good structure for this to Mr. Luke Phelps, who we have great hopes that he'll continue on that same pattern of information. But, you know, it is sort of it's a very different beast than the assembly. It really is. And it's becoming more and more apparent that, they're the piggy bank. They get all the money, but they don't exactly have all the tools that the school district has for, when it comes to process, it seems like. So hopefully they'll get a chance to improve that with their own budget this year.
Okay. Well, moving on.
There was lots of projects that went on. They took, They had the 7-day period this year. There was a lot of angst about that last year, changing the structure of that. Haven't heard a lot. I actually went through all the minutes, and last year lots of testimony from teachers, but that seems to have settled in. I'm not sure where that will go, if it'll come up again, but they went to the 7-period day. They gave out lots of student awards, which I think is really part of the best part of it. That certainly is the best part of Dr. Parmo's job. Lots for, academic and sports and Special Olympics, that sort of things. They had a slight boundary change. Makatans, who was one of the last schools we built, has become wildly popular over at the ranch subdivision. It's increasing in size, and they were way over enrollment. They needed to move about 85 kids, and so they went to a process for that with using the same demographer that they used before. That they successfully completed that, moved a few kids to Pioneer Peak and to Cottonwood, where they enhanced a few programs and were able to move a few kids in. They're running just about where they should be right now, I think. They had lots of resolutions. They passed a resolution on idle-free zones. You can't run your cars forever waiting for a kid because of the air that comes out there.
And that one was – and it's interesting.
That was a little bit of a struggle, wasn't
it? Yeah, and that's the fascinating thing about this. You're running through some things that I realize because they're not happening at the moment, we're not seeing continuation of the discussion that the decision was made. But during that time when it came – up and it was being talked about. I remember there was a passion, there was a lot of work about it, and apparently it's been settled reasonably. I haven't heard anything about that.
Again, new courses at career and technical and math and that sort of thing. They had a lot of discussion on the use of cell phones. No action was really ever taken on it, but they did talk about it and decided they would not take any action on it. Again, I said they have a new chief business officer now, and Luke Phelps. They also, Terry Irwin, handling the finances at the school, also retired as the deputy financial business officer, and Becky Wright has taken that over. So the two top financial people are now retired. Mr. Forrest will be here, I guess as a side note, he'll be here. They're in contract negotiations with their unions, and he's taking a contract until June to do that. So he will be on the peripheral here for a little while. They got lots of new bond projects, got some starts on them. They got new turf at Colony High. That, of course, that wasn't a bond project. That was a special legislative grant urged on by the Booster Club, and that got installed. Quite a lovely field now. They got new turf at the Palmer High. That was part of the bond project. That was a little bit of a struggle. There's been some problems with that. They didn't put the drains in. They thought they could do without. There was some flooding. This, of course, is all borough projects. The school board, the school decides which projects they would like to have, but they are not the ones that actually do the public works portion of it. So they had a few struggles with that turf, and they're going to have to readdress that next year. But they got some legislative money for playground equipment for the charter schools that weren't turned out could not be used as part of the bond. They had 110 school projects were approved in 2011. Lots of flooring replacements, fire alarm replacements. They had, you know, design of five schools, new schools. They're in the middle of a Palmer High renovation. They've a whole list of things, ball fields, that sort of thing. And then they took on, and this actually took a couple of meetings, what they were going to endorse for the Alaska Association of School Boards that they're a member of, and they come up with a long list of things that they want to go to the legislature and on behalf of all schools and advocate for. And because, you know, this was when Mr. Dunleavy was president, they took a lot of these up, and it was interesting looking through what they decided to go along with and what they pulled out and would not be a part of. They did want to be part of an increase to family and parental involvement in schools. They endorsed that. Early childhood education, they endorsed that. Maintaining local control over charter school formation, they were not in favor of that, which kind of was surprising. Board members Welton, Palger, and Lacey were in support, but Gaddis and Mr. Cordero and Mr. Dunleavy and were not, and so they did not approve that.
And it's interesting to be reminded that when we say the board was not in support, it's probably important to get the numbers, because as you've just pointed out, sometimes it's a split board, and you can have a 4-3 decision,
But it's predetermined. They speak with the same voice when they go after these.
Absolutely.
Right?
When they're finished, they're done. I'm just suggesting that it's
what?
Not as if everyone has been in agreement. And it's different if you come up to one of those resolutions and you're talking about it, and someone says 7-0, you know, the board is fully in favor, or you have discussion and perhaps a swing vote there that is, you know, flipping a coin almost.
And it's interesting to note that the people that were not in favor of this, and there's another one you'll see, are going on to work at the state level. Mr. Dunleavy in the Senate, Ms. Gaddis, actually is chair of House Education. Mm-hmm. So they didn't want that local control here. They may have known something, you know.
Or believed that they were going to do that. And,
yeah.
So now,
and school vouchers was another one that came up. And, of course, the Alaska Association for School Boards is not in favor of school vouchers. They do not believe that that should be the course that education takes in Alaska. But there were a split vote on that one, with members Welton, Palger, and Lacey, you know, not in favor of school vouchers either. But again, Gaddis and Dunleavy and Cordero were in favor. I believe that Ole Larson was absent during these votes.
Discussion,
right.
Yeah.
And then a centralized treasury. This was this is something that's come back and forth a few times. And, you know, the money goes, again, as we just said, goes to the borough, and they are responsible for doling it out to the school district. And the Association of School Boards have said, why doesn't the money come direct to this, you know? And there's a fee that the assembly is able, or this borough is able, to keep for that. So they were all in unison for that. But then when it came to accountability for students outside the district, and this is was one of those resolutions whether homeschool kids should really all be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, if they are taking funds for education. There is some requirement for them to do some testing. But if someone's just homeschooling a child and says, I'm just not having them in, I'm going to homeschool myself, I'm not taking any money, there's no accountability for that. And that was a split decision, too. And that was with, they were same players were, you know, against that.
So the pattern's emerged.
Pattern has emerged. Yeah. And one really kind of surprised me looking back on this was an urging of the legislature to adjust the BSA. And Ms. Gaddis voted against that, which will be is interesting, again, since she will be in the House. And one on student participation in after-school activities, Mr. Dunleavy voted against that. So there's going to be a very interesting one more was relating to secure retirement benefits for employees. Mm-hmm. And Welton and Lacey were in favor, and the rest were against that. So it's going to be interesting to see how things are legislated from the state level in view of those. You know, Mr. Cordero and Ms. Welton, or no, Ms. Gaddis, were against the school bonds when those were voted in. And so it'll be very interesting to see what the tone takes down there, right? They completed the design, the 35% design for Valley Pathways and the Matsu Day School, so that's good. They've the site selection committee, that was another one that was pretty lively.
Yes.
Because of the school bond that was passed, they decided the voters passed a $215 million school bond the year before, so they had to make sure they had sites for everything. They were able to find a site for Iditarod right next door to where it is. Mm-hmm. It was really the land everybody wanted. It wasn't very cheap, but it was made the most sense. There has been no word on what will happen to the old Iditarod school as that's built. It's not in design phase yet, so it's a while, but I'm sure there'll be some very strong opinions on what should happen with that old school. There was land set aside for a charter school for Frontieris, who has been in a rented space that they were able to get another year on, but it's a very high rent, and they want their own space. And so they are going to be sharing on some borough land where the off Bogart Road. They are in Bogart now, but a little different place on Bogart Road where the maintenance facility is. They've been able to rezone some of that, and that will hold actually three schools, the Matsu Day School, which is now 35% designed, and the future site of the Frontier School, that will probably be an issue that comes up this year if they find some funding for that. And, that was good for them. They worked very, very hard, I will say, for the Frontier's parents. They were at every meeting. They did everything that they were supposed to do to get that on there. They, again, they're going to, you know, the Kinnick area schools, that was part of the school site selection committee, too. It was not as easy as you might find to find land out in Kinnick
enough. In a place where there's so much land.
Right. In a place where there's so much land. So that was a very big struggle. In fact, the struggle was so big, Mr. Larson at one point brought a resolution along with Ms. Gaddis to just pull out of the school site selection committee process. It was voted down. They they're continuing on part of that process. Mr. Larson's been very vocal about not thinking that is a very good process. It's too politicized. I tend to agree with him on that, but I'm not sure. I know I was one that testified to say it's probably shouldn't pick up our marbles and go home, but
right.
We should try to make the committee a little better. But they have found a site now for the high school and the middle school, which they're getting worked on right now. They're going to have some road issues that they're going to have to get some funding. They're asking the legislature for some money on that. But they do have a site for that, so that's really good news. The school district at this point is busing about 900 kids a day from that Kinnick area into Wasilla, and Wasilla Middle School, which are very, very crowded at this point. Last I heard, they are pretty close to having a piece of property for the elementary school there, which was another one covered by the bond. Mm-hmm. So they're moving along with that, but it hasn't been without a few pains and along the way. Now we'll, start their budget process again, their roadshow again.
Right.
And there's some anticipated you know, what ifs again? They don't know what their funding is going to be. They anticipate some cuts again if they don't get the adequate funding from the state or from.
And of course, in contrast to this year, there's going to be a settlement with a negotiations that may have an impact upon the budget too, because it this past year was a time when you could put into the formula what you were going to be paying. For that large amount of salary. But at this point, you have another question mark.
Right, and it's worth mentioning that all what they call it, consider the big five school districts, which are Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Matsu being the second largest school district now, are all up for employee negotiations this year, which is really unusual, and that how that will affect things might be interesting, too.
And they're always looking over their shoulders at how any settlement will be viewed in Juneau.
Right. Right, yeah. Right. And again, new seats in Juneau and new seats on the school board this year. Ms. Palger is now the president of the school board. Ms. Welton was reelected, so she's back for 3 years. And there's a new school board member, Debbie Rutherford, who has a very good financial background, has her own small business, a very big advocate of education. So, I'm sort of guardedly optimistic they'll be go through those negotiations pretty well.
And one more new member that will be appointed in the early part
right.
of the election.
Right, yes. Ms. Gaddis takes her seat in the House. They've said around the 15th of January they hope to have enough resumes in from people wanting that board seat to start interviews for it by their own policy. They must appoint within 30 days to finish out Ms. Gaddis' term, which is actually just until this fall, but still very important that they have someone on that in that space. It's been reported that Mr. Cordero will be her chief of staff, so I don't know if he will take on the way Mr. Arvin and on the assembly has taken to participating, doing most of it telephonically. That remains to be seen, but that could be an interesting conversation.
Okay, so what we have is a minute to wrap up.
I think that's pretty much it. It didn't look like very much, but again, there's a lot that goes on there, and I think a lot that may be very interesting as we go into the new year.
All right. Well, we look forward to it, and thank you for this entire year's work, because it's been a labor of a persistence in order to keep all the details together and make some sense of them.
Right. I'm going to update the Citizens Lobbyist blog and put a link to both of the recordings that we've done from this one and the assembly, so people can come back and really get the ear. And I think that's important to do as we start this new year, to know what's happened, because that certainly will answer some questions about what is going to go on.
It's good information to have. We'll see you in 2013.
Right.
Thank you.